Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, it's Wednesday, everybody, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, coming to you from the recently redecorated Organizational Center of Horse Radio Network, and I must say, Goodwill did an excellent job. You are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 26, 2012, episode 496, Good Morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and
good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this hump. Jamie's holding down the fort here at Horses in the Morning at the command center here in Ocala. And very popular. We have a big show planned for you today. We have a lot of guests today, don't we, Jennifer?
It's going to be very, very busy. On today's show, here we go. Are you ready?
Ready.
I was really fishing through the thesaurus this morning, so this one's going to be fun.
Okay. I won't understand any of it, in other words.
On today's extraordinarily crappy list Wednesday edition, Brett Taft from the Open Space Pace opens the show. Stay tuned to find out why there will be horses trotting down Main Street in Freehold, New Jersey this weekend. And next up, the Velvet Voice of Victoria Spicer provides a proficient yet playful manifest of the priceless video gems to be found on Horse and Country TV this week. And being Wednesday and all, thehorse.com reaches out with another alarmingly thorough expedition into your horse's health. And scattered amidst the actual information provided in today's show, unreasonable expectations, preposterous horse-related headlines, and at least one crappy list.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I have to, before we get to our daily winnies, I have to mention something that came up on the show on Monday. Jamie was quite surprised about us liking Big Bang Theory, because she doesn't seem to like Big Bang Theory. So she posted on the Facebook page hoping to get a lot of support. And she said, well, you know, how many of you out there like Big Bang? I can't believe anybody likes it. Well, there were, believe it or not, almost 80 comments, a lot of comments from our Facebook page. And I would say about 72 of them liked Big Bang, and about 8 of them didn't. So I think Jamie kind of lost that one.
Did you block all the Facebookers who didn't like it?
No, I didn't have to. I didn't have to.
That's why there's only 8, because you blocked them?
I didn't have to. It was amazing. Favorite show on TV. Love it. It's my favorite show. Love this show. One of our favorites. I mean, it just was on and on and on. So, Jamie, just saying. Now, she did get some support. There were a couple people that chimed in that they do like. Let me see here. Oh, Biz chimed in that they like. They what's the show Jamie likes? Modern Family.
Modern Family. That's what it was.
Yeah. So she chimed in that they liked that, and you know there were a couple supporters out there for Jamie, but not a whole lot. So today I posed the question, who likes Downton Abbey? Because Downton Abbey has now started and is running the third season in England. And they're already on episode 4, and we don't get it till January the 6th. I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
Nothing until January the 6th. But we'll see what the fans say about that, Abby. Now, we interviewed a guy on the driving show. Matter of fact, it's my spotlight show for the day. The driving radio show came out yesterday. And we interviewed a guy on there, fascinating guy by the name of Barry Dickinson, who was a groom for some of the top driving stables in the world and some of the wealthiest people in the world over the years. And I asked him what he thought of Downton Abbey, because he's done all those carriages, you know, he's driven them, he's mm-hmm. dressed in the proper attire, he knows history like nobody else. He's like a walking encyclopedia of carriage history. And he didn't have much good to say about Downton Abbey in relationship to the carriages and the horses. He said he knows. Go ahead.
They alluded to that too. We were watching the Barrett Jackson auto auction. They had a couple of what they call TV cars or movie cars come through the auction, and it sounds like carriages are the same way. The carriages and their appointments are there for the camera to use, not necessarily to be accurate. Is that kind of how it went?
That's kind of how it went. He said he knows some people from the companies that provide the carriages in England to TV shows and movies. And he said there are times that they are painting the carriage a different color on the way, in the trailer, on the way to the set. And they have to tell the actors that it's wet paint. They dare not touch the side because it's just been painted. So, and he, you know, what his biggest complaint was about the horses is that they tend to show these big, flashy warm bloods. And he said they didn't use big, flashy warm bloods back then. They were using,
they didn't have big, flashy warm bloods.
No, it was the next step up from a pony, pretty much. Yeah. They were using, hackneys and other breeds like that were 14, 15 hands. So,
well, think about it, Glenn. When's the last time you watched a period movie and said, oh, what a cool, scrawny-looking half-bred that just trotted across the screen?
True.
Every time a Frisian trots by, you get all excited.
That's true. That is true. Yep. Obviously made for the 99.9% who don't know anything about horses and who will be impressed by the big, black, flashy horse. So that's what he said about it. It was kind of funny. All right. Time for Daily Winnies. My Daily Winnie is actually two birthdays, and I'm going to give them this. And that's to our listener by the name of Justin Harrison. It's her birthday today, so happy birthday, and we appreciate you listening as much as you do. She's also a driver, so I think you'll enjoy the driving radio show this week. Check it out. And also, speaking of driving, to our friend who used to work for the Queen of England in the Royal Mews for 20 years as the Royal Coachman, David Saunders' birthday is today as well.
Oh, really?
Yep, so happy birthday, David. It seems like it's driving morning here so far. Your turn to change that up.
I'm going to change it up, but only by the number of horsepower. My Daily Winnie goes out to the unnamed lawn care company who made the rocket science decision to perform 2-stroke motor-infused maintenance next door this morning at 6 a.m. before it was even light out. Thanks, guys.
They come out every week for this neighbor's house to mow, and I think they come out earlier. It wasn't even light out, and they were mowing the lawn over there this morning. It was like 6:30.
It was freaking pitch black outside. They had 2 giant-sized lawn mowers, 3 weed whackers, 2 chainsaws, and at least 1 diesel engine going. It was crazy.
It was loud over there this morning. I bet you the other neighbors love that, too. In our normally quiet, peaceful, bucolic neighborhood, we get that on Wednesday mornings. Well, a couple of news stories for you before we get into our guests here this morning. The first is we have a wrap-up here on the auction that was going on, Rita Crundwell's auction out there, actually the government's auction, selling Rita Crundwell's stuff out there. She was the one that stole all the money from the town,
mm-hmm.
and they've been auctioning off her stuff in Dixon, Illinois. And they had over 3,500 people show up over the couple of days for the auction and many, many, many more online. And they raised, get this, took in about $4.7 million just over that auction over the 2 days an unbelievable amount of money, selling her 300 horses and some of her other stuff. They sold, remember we talked about her luxury motorhome worth about $2 million. And we said the other day you could get it was up to about $200,000 the other day. Well, it ended up going for more than $800,000.
Wow.
So that ended on Tuesday. Somebody
you
took
know,
that home.
What got me curious about this whole thing, not that I think this is the wrong thing to do, this needs to happen. I'm curious about the legal precedent that allows the property to be sold before the person is convicted.
You know,
I mean, she's had charges brought up.
I know, we brought that up,
about that.
Too. Yeah, she hasn't been tried or anything. I don't know exactly how that works. Now, it does
say
that
makes perfect sense, because how are you going to take care of, what, a couple of hundred horses? Because this thing's going to be drawn out over years,
yeah,
I'm
they
sure.
were selling all her stuff. It's not like the motorhome couldn't have sat there. It's that net proceeds from the sale of Crumsville's assets will be applied toward restitution to Dixon, the town of Dixon, should the government win its civil and criminal actions. The U.S. Marshal's office said, well, if they don't, does she get the money back? You know, I don't know.
Right.
Because
I'm very curious about it. Now, somebody who kills off a bunch of horses by starving them to death gets, you know, $500 and a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
But this lady, they somehow managed to get all this stuff taken care of in 90 days. The wheels of justice moving very quickly. So we'll have to find get our lawyer gal on this.
It moved very quickly because overall $7 million was collected by auctioning off the horses, the motorhomes, and the other stuff. So, yeah, that's why it moved very quickly. And the top auction horse was Cool I Will Be, which fetched $775,000, made it one of the highest prices on record for a quarter horse at an auction. So a huge amount of money. They were very happy, the government, with what they took in over those couple of days.
AQHA Stallion. Let me guess, he's a halter horse. Let's see. Hit that button. Oh, he's got his own YouTube video. In halter and pleasure. And in Western riding. There you go. So that's who he is.
Did you see, too, that the Delaware Park canceled its September 27th, tomorrow's live racing? And, you know, you've heard occasionally about racetracks canceling racing, but Delaware Park canceled its racing for September 27th due to a lack of entries, which is not something you see very often.
It's hard for them to get to the point where they cancel it, and I wish they would do it more often, because instead of canceling racing, because if they don't race, they don't have any betting coming in, what they tend to do is just dumb down the races, make the races easier and easier and easier to get into so that they can get some bets made. And, you know, frankly, it's bad because, you know, that means the park's not making any money. But on the other hand, it's good because they didn't dumb down the races so that the three-legged ones can run.
Right.
I'm okay with it.
Right.
I'm really okay with it.
I know, it's just not something that you see very often. So I thought it was interesting. And one of the other things that happened yesterday, and this is in our lovely state of Florida.
Oh,
and
boy, here goes.
Jennifer, you can go ahead and check and see if our guest is on the line there. One of the things that happened in our state of Florida, we had a talk on Monday. Jamie brought up another drunken driver on a horse. Well, Florida yesterday, we actually had a lengthy chase on a horse. And this was in Florida. It was in Bunnell, Florida. I guess it's a small town. I don't know anything about Bunnell, Florida. I don't even know where it is. On Monday afternoon, emergency responders spoke with someone who claimed a drunk man was riding his horse to his grandmother's house. When police arrived on the scene, they discovered the man to be Charles Larkin Coward, but it was C-O-W-A-R-T. Unfortunately, the 29-year-old had no interest in coming down from his horse when he asked to proceed and proceeded to take off down the road and over some railroad tracks. Well, the authorities were apparently afraid to scare the horse by turning on their sirens. So they didn't do that. They simply followed him around until his horse got too tired to run anymore. It took a half an hour. They were following him around while he was riding his horse around like a crazy drunken guy. And then apparently when his horse got too tired to go anymore, he took off on foot and was apprehended and carted off to jail. He's being charged with a host of crimes, including disorderly conduct, cruelty to animals, and resisting arrest. He remains in jail on $7,000 bond, what the author of this article said, which seems to be about right for someone with enough free time to get drunk on a Monday afternoon. So, yeah, there was the exciting chase scene in Bonnell, Florida. You know how you see all California and they cover the chase scenes down the highways and they're going 110 miles an hour. And, you know, they cover it from beginning to end and all the news helicopters are just about crashing into each other. Well, you don't have that problem here in Florida. In Florida, we just drive around really slowly and wait for the horse to get tired enough so that the guy's about ready to fall off. And that's what happened in Bonnell, Florida yesterday. It seems like we're going to have as many drunk horse driver stories as we do stuck horse stories. So that seems to be the trend this week. We'll keep an eye out for more as the week goes along. And I'm just really proud to say that we also live in Florida, where apparently there are a lot of drunken riders.
Florida always dominates the stupid criminal list. Why is that?
It does. Bob and Sherry do stupid criminals every day on their morning show nationwide, and every day there's somebody from Florida. It never ever fails. So we're proud to live in that
criminal
state list,
Florida.
And you know what? That's tough because our next guest is from a state you would expect the stupider criminals to be from, but it's reserved for Florida, and that's Brett Taft is here, and he's going to talk to us about a program that's really cool that they're doing, and it involves a parade down Main Street in one of the cities in New Jersey. Good morning, Brett.
How are you guys doing today? Thank you for having me.
Well, terrific. I'm so glad you're here. Sorry, I'm just picking on New Jersey there a little bit. But,
yeah, we have a little bit of a bad reputation, but we're trying to change that.
Yeah, well, it looks like Florida. We actually live up to our reputation. So. Now, this project is called Open Space Pace. Tell us about what that is.
Yeah, so we started the Open Space Pace in November 2011, and we've seen attendance at the Freehold Raceway decline, and fewer and fewer people are going to the track, and Monmouth County is growing exponentially in the last few years. So we wanted to create an event that would bring people to the track, show them exactly what's going on, what is harness racing, and really create new fans for the sport that's been struggling recently.
Can you tell us a little bit about Freehold Raceway?
Yeah, Freehold, I mean, it's been around for over 150 years. I think they had fairs there in 1850. It was very popular in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and recently, they've cut back racing to 2 to 3 days a week, depending on the year. They actually stopped racing entirely in February and March of last year. So we really need new fans to come and support this great sport.
And this is all harness racing, right?
This is all harness racing, yes. And we're putting a twist on it. We're doing celebrity races, amateur races, under saddle races, and a lot of different exciting things. We're trying to bring kids to the tracks with, bringing petting zoos and pony rides and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, you know, I often wondered, and Jennifer and I have had this discussion 1,000 times, we went to the Red Mile down here about 20 years ago, and that's harness track here or in Lexington, Kentucky. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of the cool things that we found there was it was more like a fair atmosphere. There were Dixieland bands playing. There were barbecue pits going. It was just a fun day out. It didn't matter what kind of racing it was. And we always wondered why tracks didn't go for that model of making it a fun day for the family rather than just the diehard racing fans.
And you know what? That's a great point. That is exactly what we're trying to do. You mentioned live music. We're going to have live music all day long. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to have the barbecue pits, but maybe next year. And like you said, we want to bring everybody there, make it a family event, and hopefully do this every year and grow it each year that we have it.
All right, so this is
we all love food, Brett, so remember the barbecue part.
Keep that in mind. Now, September 29th, so it's this week coming up.
This Saturday, yes, sir.
Yep. And tell us exactly what the day is going to hold for people who show up.
So the day is going to start with a parade of horses down Main Street in Freehold. For all you people in New Jersey, it's going to be right in front of the Hall of Records. There will be a dignitary reviewing stand announcing each group in the parade. We're very excited about that. Once we get to the track, we expect the parade to be about an hour. We're going to start the live music with the Danny Bochner Band at 10:30.
Wait a minute. Before you go beyond the parade here, I got to ask you a question, though.
Okay.
We're not driving the crazy standardbred racehorses down the main street, are we?
No, we're not racing.
Okay.
It's actually, it's not just Standardbreds. We have a Quarter Horse Association. We have 4-H groups, the FFA, and a bunch of other equine groups.
Oh, good. I was picturing bad news coming out of the newspapers in New Jersey on Sunday morning. So I was.
You know, they've done a race down Freehold before, and it was apparently pretty successful, but not this year for us.
All right, cool. So when you get to the track, then you got a big party planned.
Yeah, we have a big party planned. We're going to kick off the music right away, and after the music starts, we're actually going to have Medieval Times do some jousting on the track. That should be very exciting, something fun for the kids. We're really trying to change it up a little bit, not the same old races, and like you said, we kind of wanted that fair mentality. At the track,
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, we're also going to have educational exhibits teaching people about why the equine industry is so important and how it affects open space, especially in our overcrowded state. So without this industry, we realize that more and more farms are going to have to move out to Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, and the surrounding states, which have a more stable equine industry.
Now, are you going to I see here one of the things that was listed was amateur group harness racing. Now, what I picture is a bunch of people like me who think they know how to drive trying to do harness racing and horses going every which direction and crashing into each other. Is that what we're talking about there?
No. The amateur races, all these people are actually licensed, and there's a certain, I'm not sure exactly how many, there's a certain amount of racing experience you have before you can get your professional license, and these are people that maybe one day aspire to be professionals. They're actually very good drivers, and they're on the card. I believe they're the 9th and 12th races of the day. So those are real races. That won't be a joke.
And a celebrity race, is that celebrities out there driving?
Yes, those are morning show hosts Lou and Liz from 94.3 The Point in New Jersey, for everybody that knows them. And they'll be going off at 11:15. I don't want to call that a joke because it's not, but it should be fun and a little bit different than anything you've seen before. And the second one is Ray Rossi and Kirk Jimenez, and same kind of thing.
All right, well, next year you need to invite Jamie and I to come up because we would love to do that. That'd be a lot of fun.
And you know what? We'd love to have you.
Yeah.
We need to put a ringer in there. They need to invite Tammy.
Oh, yeah. We'll get all the hosts from the Horse Radio Network to go up and drive against each other. Now, that would be crazy.
That would be awesome.
And see,
well, we could definitely organize that.
See, Tammy and I are the only ones that have ever driven a horse. We at least have a bit of a chance to win the race anyway.
Well, Tammy used to actually be in the standardbred business. She's going to kick all your butt.
In Australia. That's right. She drove horses in Australia. I forgot about that.
So you guys are professionals. Just so you know, though, we did bring everybody out to Sam Landy's farm in Monroe, New Jersey, and teach them how to drive. It was a good time. A lot of these people had no experience with horses in the past, so it was certainly an exciting experience, and we think everybody's really going to enjoy that on the day of the event.
Oh, no, I wish we lived closer to New Jersey. This just sounds like a fun Saturday afternoon out.
It really should be, yep.
Well, that's terrific. Now, how many, normally on a race card, how many races are there at a standardbred track like Freehold?
It really depends. On Thursday or Friday, there will be 10 or 11 races. On Saturday, anywhere from 11 to 13. Today, on our day, there will be 12 races.
And I assume that New Jersey's not a state that has casinos at the tracks. Is that correct?
No, we do not.
Yeah, which, And you're saying, as you said, you're trying everything you can to get the people out, and I think that's terrific. And I know that, standardbred racing's been hit a lot harder than thoroughbred racing, and now especially in Canada with what's going on up there. So,
oh, absolutely, yep.
I hope you guys.
All you Canadians come down to New Jersey. They're having a good time in New Jersey. Come on down. They'll welcome you. They'll all learn to speak French on your behalf and have barbecue.
I'm sure they can put up a replica of the Eiffel Tower somewhere up in New Jersey to attract the Canadian French down. I think this is a wonderful idea. I think what you guys are doing is important and hopefully trying to preserve an industry that, you're right, it started in the fairs. And still there is some harness racing in the fairs, but not like it used to be. But yet that is what drew, tens and tens of thousands of people was fairs. It wasn't the crappy food. It was the harness racing originally.
Exactly. You're absolutely right about that. And like you said, the fairs are exciting. It brings you a reason to go to the track other than the racing. And, this year we're hoping to get 5,000 people there. Obviously, it's going to be weather related. But if we grow that each year, you tell your friends and everybody tells somebody else. And the next year, maybe we have 10,000 people.
Now, what's the charge to get in?
Okay, so it's going to cost you $2 to park your car. We can't control that. We wanted to create an event that there was no charges. So $2 to park your car. You can come into the track. You can enjoy every event we have, no charge after that. We do have prime viewing for the concert. Those are $15 a ticket, pre-sale, $20 at the event. You'll be able to hear the concert without paying that, but you will be getting a better seat, a better view of the stage, and you'll be closer to the stage. That's kind of just something we had to do.
And who's playing?
The headliner band is Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes. You may know them. They're a very popular band from Monmouth County. They go back a very long time, and Bon Jovi actually credits Southside Johnny with getting them going.
Huh. Well, very good. Well, this is very exciting. Good luck with it. We'll check in with you next week and see how the event went. And I really hope that more tracks, take your lead and do stuff like this. I would love to see, something fun every weekend at a track to really draw people out there as just entertainment, as a fun, as a fun day out in addition to the racing. I think that's what it's going to take to build them back up. So good job.
Exactly. And we hope to lay the blueprint that other people can follow. And maybe this happens more and more.
And
what's that?
Go ahead. What's the website? I just wanted to give that
The
out
website
there.
Is www.openspacepace.org. From there, you'll find a link. You can go to eventbrite.com. You can also find us on Facebook.
Very good. Very good.
Yep.
And Freehold Raceway is in Freehold, New Jersey, which, for those that don't know, is about, in the middle of the state?
Yep. Central New Jersey, Monmouth County.
Very good. Thank you, Brett. We really appreciate you being on, and good luck. I hope this works out for you.
Thank you, guys. Come out to the track and have a great day.
That is something that Jennifer and I have talked about many, many times, is whether it's standardbred tracks or other tracks, they really need to make it a party. They really need to make it a reason for people to come out. And I realize that requires a lot of work and a lot of effort and, is not necessarily cheap. But, if they bring in the people, they will bet on races. They will, they will participate in that side of it. But they really have to have that reason to come out to the track more than just watching the horses go around.
Yes, I think culturally, horse racing is not a reason to go anymore versus, 100 years ago it was. So we need to really reintroduce American people to the fact that horse racing is fun to watch as a spectator. And what better way to get them in than to provide something else they already do like concerts and barbecues and stuff for the kids to do. These guys really sound like they've crossed their T's and dotted their I's. Under saddle racing, if you haven't heard of that before, seen it, rarely seen in this day and age in America, but you do still see it in Canada. As a matter of fact, Jimmy
Tatker. Was the saddle under the horse?
No. Jimmy Tatker that we had on the show a while back, that is the extremely successful standardbred trainer up in Canada, still trains his horses under saddle. Harness horses, trotters and pacers, used to be both trained and raced under saddle, in addition to in a sulky. And it looks like they're going to have an under saddle race, which should be just awesome to see.
So now will they pace and things under saddle? Is that what?
Yes, you still have to gate. You can't be galloping. Not that it would do much good on a standardbred. But I want to see that in person sometime. I've seen it. I've seen photographs of it. I don't think I've even seen video. So I'm definitely going to drop Brett an email, make sure he comes back on after this is over and see how it went. I'm crossing my fingers for great weather for him. Really kind of a neat day out. So anybody over there in the Garden State area who's got a little time on Saturday afternoon, head on out there and enjoy the fun. And then stop by our Facebook page and tell us how much fun you had.
Well, we're going to have to try and get up there next year and do the celebrity race. I would like that. That'd be fun.
I want to see you driving a sulky. They're going to have to put a backrest on it, an lounge chair for you.
I want to see. Wendy would have a blast. Wendy would be the one we'd have to worry about. Our driver. She'd be
galloping.
Yeah,
her horse would break gate and she'd be out of there.
And Tammy, she's a shill in that one. I'd love to see Alan driving. That would be fun. That would.
Alan would take the under saddle route, and he'd have a lasso, and he'd be healing somebody. You're out of the race.
Well, let's take a break for Equestrian Collections Product of the Week, and then we're going to be back with our next guest here already. Victoria Spicer will be here with the European Report from horseandcountry.tv. Hi, Glenn, back with you from the Horse Radio Network. I'm here with Debbie with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
Hi, Glenn. This week I'm talking about the Itchin' Post. If your listeners are like my horses, if your horses are like my horses, they are changing coats right now. They're shedding out their summer coats, getting on their winter coats, and they are scratching on everything. This is the answer to that problem. It is a flat piece of material called Santoprene, which is the same thing they make hairbrushes and baby toys out of, and it's got some stuff that it won't deteriorate in the weather. It comes in a 14 inch by 24 inch piece. You actually put this on a fence post. You can put it on the outside of your barn, a tree. I've seen it in all these places. Anywhere your horse is, they'll find it. Then they'll come over and scratch on it. And I'll tell you from experience, it doesn't pull tail hair, which is something as a gypsy owner that we're very cognizant of. It seems small when you get it, but that's all. You should only need one. You put it up, they'll find it, and they will scratch on it. You can put it in those stalls. You can put it outside. It's really a nice little thing to have if you have your horse scratching and maybe taking down your barn. If you put this on something that's sturdy, he'll scratch on that. He will choose that to scratch on over other things in your barnyard. So take a look at the Itchin' Post on EquestrianCollections.com.
How does it? Very good. That's the Itchin' Post, and it's kind of a good idea, I think. Instead of having them scratch all over everything, you can have them scratching just where you want them to. So that's at EquestrianCollections.com. And, of course, holiday season is going to be coming up before we know it, only like 13 weeks left until Christmas. So for all of your Christmas shopping needs, think about Equestrian Collections. Well, now we have royalty showing up here, and on that note, thing we get to royalty anyway, and that's Victoria Spicer from horseandcountry.tv. How are you, Victoria?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Okay, are your voice any better?
Yes, it is a bit better. I'm less croaky than I was.
Oh, that's good, because, you know, we were used to your lovely voice, and then last week you sounded like me.
Yes, it was said numerous times, so been a bit quieter than usual.
Yes, I know, and everybody in the office is going, yes, let it last, right?
Exactly.
Well, I'll tell you what's going on over there in England. Is the rain stopped now? Are you into dry season yet?
Well, we had 2 weeks of summer, and it's been the wettest summer I've ever known, and we've had so many events cancelled, and we're back into rain again. We've had deluges, we've got flooding, and it's not great.
Okay, I'm sorry I asked. I didn't mean to depress you. You guys have. I mean, you're known, obviously, the stereotype is that you're drizzly and rainy all the time anyway, but this year really has lived up to the stereotype, hasn't it?
It really has, and I grew up in Scotland, which is very cold and wet, but down in the south, it's normally quite nice, and I've lived here for quite a long time, and the weather is definitely better down here, but just this summer has been a complete washout throughout the country.
Are they expecting now, are they talking about a very cold, snowy winter, or?
Oh, probably. I haven't heard it yet, but knowing our luck, yeah, we'll have 6 foot of snow drifts all across the country.
Now, are they good at removing snow over there? Do they have that down to a science, or is it a bad thing? Because your roads are so narrow, too.
In Scotland, they are, because they're used to it. And so they have gritters, and they have, a decent system of getting cleared up, and also there's less cars on the road, and the people who are driving are able to cope with snow. Down in the south, it's ridiculous. You get a sprinkling of snow and the whole place grinds to a halt, and people won't leave their house and can't get to work. It's ridiculous.
We feel the same way about the southerners here who get a little bit of snow. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, tell us, we're going to talk a little bit about the Grand National. Tell us what the Grand National is first.
the Grand National is a very famous race, known to a lot of people in the film National Velvet with Elizabeth Taylor. But it's been around for hundreds of years, and it is the biggest, longest, most frantic horse race in the whole world, I think. And it's over 4 miles and 4 furlongs over these huge, big fences. And it's an amazing race, and it's the one day in the year when actually everybody stops and watches horse racing and talks about horse racing. And when it comes down to it, equestrianism and racing are minority sports, and it's great that we have this one day when everybody stops to watch this one race. But it's also the time that people turn in, and if they see horses falling or jockeys falling off all the time, I think they get the impression that racing's always this dangerous, and it isn't. So there's been lots of calls to make the race safer, and they're making a number of changes this year to see whether they can improve the safety record. But it remains to be seen whether it's ever going to be made completely safe, and can any equestrian event ever be completely safe.
So what are they doing? What kind of changes did they make?
They're modifying some of the fences. So there's one fence called Beecher's Brook, where if you jump it on the inside, it's on a higher slope, like you've got a bigger drop, and then it levels out. And it kind of makes people spread out. So if you've got a good jumper, you jump on the inside so that you're saving time. Whereas if you've got a less good jumper, you can sort of take yourself to a wider position. But now they're going to level it out, so it's a bit safer. But that means everybody's going to be trying to get onto the inside so that they get round the quickest.
Right.
They're moving the start just to stop, 40 horses, because it's a huge race. 40 horses take part.
Wow.
40?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is. I mean, it's a complete spectacle. There's been a couple of horses killed in the last two runnings of the race, and so it does attract a lot of negative press as well.
Well, obviously we as horse people know you can do anything. Horses will find a way to hurt themselves if we're not riding them.
Exactly.
that's their job and their quest in life is to hurt themselves, so we have to run up huge vet bills. And that's
exactly.
Spoken by America's horse husband right there, I'm telling you. But you're right. I mean, we can do things like they're trying to do in eventing with tree, and it's like, we have that. They have that problem at the Calgary Stampede too with the chuck wagon races. Chuck wagon races are fun to watch, but when there's an accident, it's bad.
It's bad, really fast. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and when you have 40 horses racing, you got the potential for things going really bad. I mean, you do. It doesn't matter how many precautions you take.
Yeah, definitely, and that's what one of our leading charities, World Horse Welfare, has said, that they agree with the changes, and anything to do that can make it safer is better, but that they think the field size should be reduced. But who's to say if the field size is reduced, they might have less horses fatally injured, but in terms of a percentage, if you have one killed instead of two, it's still going to have a similar percentage of fatalities.
Right.
So... I don't know whether reducing the field size will make a size difference. However, last year, the two horses that were killed, one of them fell when it was running loose. So there's not a lot anybody could have done. And the other one was brought down by a faller. So maybe if there's less horses, there's going to be less accidents like those two.
Well, I think it's probably very, very fun to watch, and we hope this year they get through it without any problems whatsoever. Now, you did a story on one of our rock stars stealing one of your best horses.
Yes, indeed. Jessica Springsteen, daughter of Bruce, who came over to Windsor Horse Show last year, and everybody in the press is writing about Bruce Springsteen. We had a sudden revival of boss fever. And she's been to quite a few shows over here now, and she's just bought one of our top show jumpers who helped us win gold at the Olympics. So Peter Charles, his Vindicat, has gone across to Jessica now.
I saw that headline, and I immediately went over to her Facebook page and liked her, and I sent her a Facebook message, but she hasn't responded yet.
Oh, I don't think riders are very good at Facebook and Twitter. They're too busy riding.
I don't think Jessica Springsteen and other rock star children are really good at it.
No, possibly
but
not.
I invited her to be on the show, but she hasn't responded yet.
Well, she has been on the Horse Radio Network. She has been on our shows in the past. So
she was on the Jumper Star.
Yeah, she was on the jumping show at one point. Hey, I do have to tell you, speaking of Bruce Springsteen, did you hear that, you know, he's 63 years old, but he's still rocking out, and he did a show last week in at the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. And it was delayed for 3 hours because of rain and lightning, and it was his birthday, actually. And guess who joined him on the stage for his birthday to sing backup?
Jessica.
No, his mother, who's apparently like 86 or something. Yeah, she's still alive.
I wasn't expecting that.
And she, Adele is her name, and she went up there, and she joined him on, and sang backup vocals to Twist and Shout was the song that she joined in. And she actually apparently busted a couple of moves I saw on the video they had of it. I would play a little bit of it for you, but there was so much swearing that it would take me forever just to cut out all the swearing. Bruce still can swear up a storm on stage, let me tell you.
Oh, so it was Bruce. It wasn't his mother that was swearing.
No, it was Bruce. Bruce, but so she was up there busting a move on stage. It's funny that the Springsteens, you know, you didn't hear about the Boss for a while, and now all of a sudden they're back in the news everywhere.
Indeed, yeah, everywhere, having a revival. But it's interesting to see whether Jessica's going to be. If she can live up to all that expectation of having a rich, famous rock star father, and now she's got an Olympic gold medal winning horse, and we'll have to see.
We had the same conversation with Totalus was sold. You know, can anybody ride the champion horses, or is there a true partnership, you know, that makes him a winner? And you know, that's I think in some, you know, the answer is not clear. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So we'll find out.
Indeed. I mean, I think when you look at the world championships and show jumping, when they do swap horses and top four riders will all swap, and like you tend not to have a disastrous round. So I think if you're used to jumping and competing at that level, you can usually pretty easily adapt to sit different horses.
Well, that's a good question too, Victoria. Do you think that it's easier to do that in jumping than it would be in dressage?
Maybe because it's, I guess, in dressage, it's such a precision sport, and the tiniest little shift in weight or a different approach can cause the horse to react in a different way. And so maybe that's why Totalus hasn't had the same success with his new rider as he did with Edward Gall, whereas show jumpers maybe are a bit better at just getting on with it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. They have to find the line and the spot, and if they can do that, you know, we hope the horse can take them over.
Indeed.
Jennifer?
I was just looking up Vindicat, because I wasn't real familiar with the horse or his record. He's a gelding, which is interesting, because so many of the very top-level show jumpers are stallions, and he's a gelding. So she bought herself a fantastic Grand Prix jumper, who, once he's done being a Grand Prix jumper, not a real great long-term investment. So let's hope she can jump that horse. Because
indeed.
If she can't, she's stuck.
Maybe she's just got him and aiming for Rio 2016, and that's all.
That's a long time away, yeah. Wow.
Any rumors on the price?
I haven't heard, I'm afraid, but yeah, I think... I don't think they'll have got too much change back from, I don't know,
he traded him six
million
backstage passes to a concert with
I think it was probably a little more than that. So now I think what she paid for that horse, she could probably fill several stadiums full of concerts. The Global Champions Tour, which is a big show jumping tour that travels the world, is going to be a highlight on Sky 280 on your station over there this week.
Indeed, yes, we've got action from the Global Champions Tour, as we have throughout the series, and it's coming to the end of this year's series. So if you're in the UK, do check that out.
Very good. And Horse and Country TV, of course, you have some programming on, or you have some programming over here, and you can also find the rest of the programming at horseandcountry.tv. There's so many good videos, and I know I've told you this before, but I'm going to say it again. I absolutely love, and I'm a geek, so I'm just going to compliment you guys again and tell whoever the geeks are there at Horse and Country that the layout of your website is one of the best for any site of its kind that I've seen. It's just terrific.
Thank you. Our designers will be very happy about that. But we went through a big redesign earlier this year, and I really do think it has made a huge big difference about how easy it is to find things. And we're there producing loads of videos from like full length programs, just to like little short video clips, and I think we're doing that, and it's all completely free, which lots of websites try and charge for video content. So yes, we are free, so come and join us.
Well, and it's easy. I mean, it's just easy to get around. It's very clean. I just love how clean it is. I just like it. Very well done. So good job.
Thank you.
Good job. You can take credit for it, Victoria. I know you don't do code, but you can just take credit for it anyway.
Yeah, definitely don't do code.
All right. Thank you very much, Victoria. We'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure. Talk to you next
week.
That's
horseandcountry.tv. And we do appreciate Victoria joining us here every week, all the way from England. It's nice to get a European perspective occasionally. Well, we're going to welcome a new sponsor to the show. I had a chance to sit down with Lisa, who's a sales coordinator with Stable Comfort by ProMat. And what a neat system this is, and what a great idea to make your horses more comfortable and to make your life a whole lot easier. So let's listen to my chat with Lisa, the sales coordinator with Stable Comfort. Hi, Lisa, and thank you so much for joining us on the show here today. And I want to officially welcome you as the newest sponsor on the Horse Radio Network. We appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Glenn. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, we're hoping today to find out a little bit about your product because it is unique, and it's something that I've seen before. I actually saw it at a show I went to, and I was fascinated by it. So we're going to find out about that. But first, tell us a little bit about the parent company.
Absolutely. ProMat Incorporated is located out of Woodstock, Ontario, Canada, established in 1991, and the kind of flagship company product was the dairy industry. We realized that putting mattresses under dairy cows would cause them to lay down longer and thereby producing more milk. So it was a bottom line money maker for the dairy farmer. Then in 1999, after we had so much success with the dairy industry, the ProMat decided to pioneer the Stable Comfort system. Between the two systems, we're actually in over 46 countries worldwide.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. So you're an international company, and Stable Comfort is the product that we're going to talk about the most here today. And I understand ProMat has a number of products. There's a number of different products, but Stable Comfort is what we're going to talk about. Tell us about Stable Comfort. What is it, first of all?
Absolutely. Stable Comfort is a three-piece system that works as a one-piece system. It's a flooring system for the horse barn, for the indoor stalls. It comes in any size. We can accommodate any stall size. And basically what happens when the entire flooring is installed, it becomes a one-piece, waterproof, non-draining flooring system where the comfort is already built into the system, and then we keep any problem things like the urine, the manure, we keep everything on top of the system where it can be then dealt with. The urine can be easily removed, it can be disinfected, all these great features of our product. A lot of time and effort and research and development was put into exactly what the equine industry was looking for in a flooring system. And the result was Stable Comfort.
Well, let's bring it down to the components here, because we're all used to the average ordinary person, if I have a barn, I go out and I buy some floor mats and I throw them on the floor. And what happens is, over time, the floor mat corners start to pop up, and I have to drag the darn things out, and I have to try and clean mm-hmm. under them and level the floor because it's gotten all bumpy. And the urine goes down underneath and basically makes a cesspool. And then it's stinky. And
Glenn,
it's just,
I hear this every day. Every day I have clients calling in saying, I hate my rubber mats. I just hate them. They're big. They smell. I have to move them. I have to disinfect them. What system?
Well, the worst part is when the gunk gets under them and then it turns up and then you break your pitchfork trying to clean the stall because
Absolutely.
It gets caught underneath the mat. It's just terrible. And what this does is it eliminates all those problems.
Absolutely. What we're doing is we are basically keeping everything that could cause problems above our system, on top, which is where it can be easily removed. When you're talking about bedding on top of rubber mats, you're talking about sometimes even up to 6 to 8 inches of bedding, which you don't need anymore. With a stable comfort system, we already have the comfort built into the mattress.
And what does that mean? What are you talking about there?
There's a 2.5-inch rubber crumb-filled mattress, which is the bottom layer of our stable comfort system.
Oh, so it truly is a mattress.
Yeah, and our research and development has shown that we actually call the mattress our pasture mat because it mimics nature's pasture, which is the best place for a horse to lay down, to get up. They feel free. It's gentle on their hocks. They don't get hock sores from being out in the pasture. They get hock sores from being on hard rubber mats or hard dirt floors. So what we've done is we've taken these 2.5-inch thick rubber crumb filled, they're cellular mattresses. We put them on the bottom layer, and that provides the comfort that a horse needs. Now, comfort is one thing, and it's very important for a horse to feel comfortable. That way it will lay down, it will get up with confidence. The other important thing is that the top cover that we stretch over top of the mattress has the traction, and the horse will have confidence. They're not going to slip around. There's other products on the market there that are very slippery, that are very slick. And ours is a rubber-based, it's a rubber-impregnated top cover where the rubber can never be removed from the fabric. It is just an absolute one-piece top cover. And when the mattress system and the top cover work together, we've got the comfort built in, but we also have the control and the stability that a horse needs.
And then you just put your bedding down. That absorbs the manure and, you know, everything else.
Yeah.
But you need less bedding because you're not really worried about making it soft for the horse at this point, because the mat actually does that.
Absolutely. There's less bedding needed. It's up to 75% less bedding, depending on the type of bedding that you use. Because what you're doing now is you're bedding only with the mindset of absorbing the urine and easy removal of the manure. A lot of horses are also instinctual creatures in that they will only urinate at one part of their stall.
Yeah.
They're going to eat on another.
The nice
another
ones
quarter.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And for those animals, it's fantastic in their stalls, because really you only need to bed where the horse is going to be urinating and where the manure is going to be, because it's only to have an easy removal of that. We're going to keep the ammonia smell is going to be drastically reduced. Where the horse is eating is going to be more of a dust-free surface. They're not going to be taking in as much of the dust. All in all, it will save money over time and also will save on the horse's health.
And we overlook the ammonia part a lot, but you know, there have been numerous studies that we've read over the years that that ammonia is bad for horses. And I've been in some barns, I'm telling you, that I wanted to pass out.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's just, it's actually as bad as it is for you breathing it and you're going, I can't breathe. It's the same thing for the horse. They're not immune to that.
Absolutely. And so when we are able to actually remove the urine, we're able to remove the trouble spots. On other systems, maybe you're thinking on a solid rubber mat, well, I can remove most of the bedding. That's right. But the bedding that you're not removing is getting down into the cracks and is going to cause problems over time. But with a stable comfort system, you can even, as often as you would like, you can even disinfect our product. You can hose it down.
I was going to ask you that.
Meaning that you can, whenever you want to have a perfectly clean stall, wall to wall, you're going to be able to return to that baseline with ease.
So you just hose it out, because it actually goes up along the walls. It's attached on the sides of the walls, so it acts as, it's not going to get down along the cracks either.
Absolutely. We have some products that we also suggest for disinfecting, but to be perfectly honest, even a 5% bleach solution works just fine to disinfect the product.
Well, this is a very, very cool, and it can be made in any size, so it doesn't matter whether I have a 10 by 10 or 12 by 12 or 12 by 14. It you can accommodate any of those?
Absolutely. You give our office a call and let us know how many stalls you have, what size they are, and we're going to be able to help you out to any stall size. We've done 20 by 20s, 30 by 30s. We've done even larger than that. We will customize our product to your specific needs. We have people who say, I have 4 12 by 12 stalls, and there's removable walls in between. Can you help me with this? Absolutely, no problem. Like I said, we customize our system to your specific needs.
And is this something that I can put in myself, or do I need a professional? Keep in mind, I'm just a horse husband, so.
Sure. The majority of our consumers choose to install a stable comfort system themselves because it is a system that is, I'm not going to say it's easy. It's not one, two, three, but it is something that you can be capable of doing, no problem. We have an installation DVD which goes step by step through all the details. You can also find that video on stablecomfort.com. The other thing is we have printed directions that we can actually liaison with your contractor. If you have asked them to do the installation for you, we will work with them. We can also be available as they are installing for them to ask us questions specifically. So we're pretty easygoing to help people. But like I said, most of consumers choose to install the stable comfort system themselves.
Now, and I'm thinking about uses here in the horse world. Obviously, anybody, any barn, but especially for foals, for pregnant mares. If you have it as a mommy and kid stall, then that's even better because you don't want the baby inhaling lots of ammonia or dirt or dust or anything either. And it's so much easier to keep the stall clean for the babies. I would think that if you have older horses, you know, just any horses, but I'm thinking the ones that it would really be, you know, really good for.
Sure, you're going to see very clear benefits when you're putting our system under a lame horse or in a maternity stall, in a foaling stall, things like that, absolutely. But we also don't want to discount the racehorse, the show horse, or even the hobby horse. Because down the road, your medical bills are going to be less, your bedding costs are going to be less because you have them on a system that mimics the pasture that they have outside. That being said, we love working with people who are doing foaling stalls. We have even a product where we can go on the walls. We love working with vet clinics. I know that one of the vet clinics close to our head office here has the system on their floors and the walls of the rooms where the horses come out of anesthetic. That's to protect the horse and also the people who are in the stall with the horse.
The other question I had, of course, everybody's thinking is about the cost and about what it takes to get this done.
Absolutely, Glenn. And, you know, it is more economical than people would normally think that this is going to be. Due to the varying nature of the stall sizes, various places within the United States, we do provide quotes to anyone who requests them. You can request them by calling head office at 888-337-6265. Visit us online at stablecomfort.com, and there's a handy contact form there where you can request a quote. And we normally get back to our customers within usually 24 hours, sometimes up to 48 hours, with a quote, freight information, and from there we can customize our system to your needs.
Well, very good. Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us, and thank you again for becoming a sponsor here on the show. You can find out all you need to find out at stablecomfort.com. All their contact information is on there, and there's a whole bunch of good information on there about how this works, and it's endorsed by, you know, a number of people that have been guests on our shows. Chris Cox has been a guest. Craig Johnson's been a guest. Mary King, of course, has been a guest on our show. So all of them are endorsing Stable Comfort and use it for their horses. So check it out at stablecomfort.com.
Ready?
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close to fire. Today you might get off scot-free, but chances are eventually he'll go up. You come down, that's when you'll understand this song. I can't tell you what to do, but green on green makes black and blue. take my word. Three on green makes black and blue. It's like walking on a hot pot wire, dynamite too close to fire. Today you might get off scot-free, but chances are eventually you go up, you come down. That's when you understand this song. I can't tell you what to do, but green on green makes black and blue.
Well, that's Green on Green makes black and blue. Marianne Kennedy. You can find all her music at mariannekennedy.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I'm Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen. Jamie is off today. She'll be back on Friday just in time for really bad ads. And this week you want to get your ads in because we have a Redmond Rock gift pack that will be given away this week. Of course, Redmond Rock is the mineral blocks that we all love here at the Horse Radio Network. Beaker absolutely loves his Redmond Rock. And you can find them at almost every retailer now across the country. If you see the display with the big red rocks in it that are all just look like rocks, they're not all shaped. The horses, we actually use the Redmond Rock, same stuff, chopped up and ground up into salt. And then we use that instead of salt here at the house as well. So Redmond Rock, we thank them at RedmondEquine.com for providing the prize for this week's Really Bad Ads. Get it into Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com with Really Bad Ads in the subject line. And now it is time for...
It's time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Good morning, Michelle.
Hey, Glenn. How are you doing?
Okay. This is Michelle with thehorse.com, and we're so happy to have you here as usual on Wednesday. And I hear you brought somebody along, a doctor with an accent this time.
Yes. Dr. Allison Stewart from Auburn University is with us. Dr. Stewart.
Hello, Jennifer and Glenn. How are you?
Okay. Where are you from, Dr. Stewart?
I'm actually from Melbourne in Australia, I apologize about my Australian accent mixed with the southern drawl. We have a bit of a mess, but I'll do my best.
I love it. Tammy from our Western radio show, host over there, the Western radio show is from Australia and lives in Texas. So we get a lot of Australian yalls. terrific.
Nice. Well, Dr. Stewart is here to talk with us about rabies, and she is board certified in internal medicine and emergency critical care, and is an associate professor down there at Auburn University. And so rabies, when I think of rabies, I think of Old Yeller or the rabid dog in To Kill a Mockingbird. That's what comes to mind. I think of our dogs getting, you know, tangled up with raccoons or, you know, some other rabid animal. Is this a concern for us with our horses?
Oh, definitely, Michelle. Last year, in 2011, in the United States, there were actually 53 horses and mules that died of rabies. This is not a large number, but it's a pretty significant number, and it's a horrible way to die. And it also probably hundreds of people at risk of rabies.
Mm-hmm. So it's not only a risk to the horses, it's a risk to those of us who are around our horses.
Yes, certainly. I mean, if you've got a sick horse and he starts to show some clinical signs that are unusual, you're usually trying to take care of him, and the veterinarian and anybody else in the barn can be exposed, and it's usually several days before the diagnosis is finally made, and many times many people have been exposed to the virus during that time.
So you just mentioned it's a virus. What causes rabies?
It is a rhabdovirus, which is a very, very nasty virus, and that gets into the animal via saliva or blood, usually from a bite wound, and then it travels up the nervous system into the brain, and then the animal starts to show clinical signs. It actually gets into the salivary gland before it reaches the brain. So a rabid animal can be shedding the rabies virus in saliva before it even shows any abnormal clinical signs.
That's scary.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with, you know, we think rabid dog, the foaming of the mouth, the kind of wild behavior, what are the clinical signs in our horses if they contract rabies?
Well, it's a gradually progressing disease. The horses continue, or any animal continues to deteriorate. But the most common clinical signs that are seen initially is a mild lameness, and maybe that switches from one leg to another. And then you might see them becoming ataxic or wobbly. Sometimes they show signs of colic, and there have been some horses that went to colic surgery and they didn't find anything and it turned out they had rabies. Usually they start, which is very scary for veterinarians, and then most of the time they start, then the neurologic signs continue to progress. So the wobbliness, we start to see cerebral signs or signs affecting the brain. The animal might become depressed and not able to eat, or often they actually become aggressive. Cattle tend to always become depressed, where horses can be either depressed or aggressive. And, of course, the dogs, as you know, are usually aggressive. Sometimes they can show signs of choke, though that's more common in cattle. Sometimes they will salivate, but usually not. They often have intense itchiness, and sometimes they actually... We have what we call super libido. Sometimes they actually want to try and, you know, mount other animals and act like a stallion, which is a little frightening as well if you've got a rabid gelding that now thinks he's a stallion.
You know, the problem with all of that, Michelle and Dr. Stewart, is they mimic so many other diseases, all the things you just said.
Yes, a horse with the first signs of rabies can look like anything, and so it's something we need to keep our minds open for. And the biggest risk is that if a horse shows some of these mild signs and then happens to die, progresses very quickly and dies, and a post-mortem is not performed and rabies testing is not performed, then there might have been people that were exposed or other animals that were exposed, and nobody will know until the next person or animal gets sick. And that's quite a scary thing.
How long does it live, you know, let's say saliva, how long does it live outside the body? Do we know?
It's very short. So if a horse was to, or a dog was to drool or bleed, it would die very, very quickly.
Okay.
So we know in the environment the survival time is very short. And even if you get bitten or get saliva, if you get saliva on your hand, you can just wash that off and you will probably be fine. But if you happen to have a small cut and that saliva or blood got in your cut or you were bitten, then you've been directly inoculated. But in the environment, it has a very short lifespan.
What, and do you mean minutes or hours? Or
Minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So the neurologic signs that you mentioned, the ataxia, that sounds to me a lot like it could be EPM or West Nile virus. So as a vet, how do you approach these neurologic cases and protect yourself in case of it is a rabies
Yes, well, I work at a referral hospital, so we have neurologic horses that are sent in to us because we have a padded stall and slings and lots of people that can take care of these animals. And if it's EPM or West Nile, you know, they've got a pretty good chance at survival. But when a neurologic horse comes in, we always have rabies on our differential list. You know, it might be at the bottom. You know, we might be thinking West Nile first, then Triple E, and then EPM or head trauma or any of these things, but we always keep rabies on our list, and herpes virus as well. And as you know, herpes virus can be spread to other horses, so we're often taking precautions of wearing protective gowns and boots and gloves in case it's herpes virus, and we also do the same for rabies. And
now,
if it's a,
Dr. Allison, what would make rabies move up that list? When a let's say a referral case came into your hospital, obviously there's a big bite on his knee. That would move it up the list. But are there other things that would make rabies move further up the list?
Yes, certainly. If they are showing signs of aggression and rapidly deteriorating signs, then rabies would be further up our list. We had a case several years ago that came in and was down in the trailer and biting at itself, and the owner didn't want to treat it, but we insisted that we try and get a post-mortem, put that horse down and get a post-mortem. So that one, we had rabies at number one on our list, and we were very, very careful in how we handled that animal and the number of people that were exposed. That wasn't one that we allowed the students to get the history and go and do a physical exam on. There was only three of us that actually handled that horse.
Do you get an annual rabies vaccine, Dr. Allison?
Yes, yes. We vaccinate all our students and technicians and faculty members and residents here at the university, and most veterinary practices are hopefully doing the same. And we have our titers checked every 2 years. And that is a big expense for a low-risk disease, but because of the consequences that it's almost uniformly fatal, we are all vaccinated.
So what kind of animals are the horses usually contracting rabies from?
It depends a little bit on the area of the country, but down here in the south it's usually raccoons or bats. It depends, you know, on the part of the country or the world that you're in. But if there's fox rabies overseas, there's the dog rabies in India and other foreign countries. We don't have canine rabies anymore, the disease that killed old Yeller. Luckily, we've eliminated that. But raccoons, bats, skunks, any animal that you see wandering around the barn during the day that's usually not wandering around the barn. Normally a raccoon is going to be out at night and doing his foraging at night, but if you see him wandering around or acting vicious during the day, then I would certainly have rabies up on the top of the list for that wildlife species.
So around the barn, we have lots of other critters other than our horses. You mentioned that you and your students get vaccinated for rabies. Do you recommend vaccination for the barn kitties and the dogs that are in the stables as well?
Yes, yes, definitely the animals. We don't recommend, or the medical profession doesn't recommend vaccinating all the people in the U.S., only if you're in a high-risk category, like you're in the military or you want to ride a bike in India or you're a veterinarian. But certainly we should vaccinate our animals, our pets, and our livestock. And that's one, to protect them, and also to protect ourselves and our children and our barn workers and the kids riding in the barn.
Well, I got to tell you too, Michelle, we had an experience with this. I told this story before, I think, that I came out to the barn one day and there was this raccoon in the rafter of one of the stalls right above one of our ponies. And he was just acting weird. So I shot it. It actually took 12 shots and I hit it every time to kill the thing, which we knew was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things when they have rabies, if you shoot them, they tend not to, they will die quicker if they don't have rabies. I don't know if it's the adrenaline in the system or if it's a disease or what. But so we did take it to the state and have it tested and tested positive. The states still take this very seriously, Dr. Stewart. They came out that day and they told us which horses we had to quarantine and what we had to do and what we had to wash down. And we ended up having to quarantine that horse for, I think it was 3 months.
Yes, yes. That would be difficult.
Yeah, so
we have signs
everywhere.
Yeah, signs everywhere.
Signs
we
everywhere.
Have signs.
No, it's a very serious problem, because if that horse did get infected and then you happen to sell him, or maybe he got colic and died, it's essential that a post-mortem is performed and rabies testing is done, because you and your family, you know, will have been exposed to that horse that you love during that time. So that's most of the quarantine, is to keep track of that horse if something happens to him or he starts showing some of these unusual signs.
Unfortunately, this pony never did. Now,
great.
Do people still have to get all the shots in the stomach, that whole painful process
that
used to be?
It depends on the exposure. If, say, you had been bitten by the raccoon while you were trying to euthanize him, or he had scratched your arm or something like that, then you have been exposed to an animal that was rabid and that you were able to prove to be rabid, so you would have to have a series of about 7 vaccine injections over the next couple of weeks, and also the hyperimmune plasma as well, those huge big injections of a large volume. So that makes you a bit of a pincushion, which is why we get vaccinated. And then if we're exposed as veterinarians, we won't have to have the plasma, but we will have to have a couple more vaccines.
Is it in the stomach still?
I'm not sure. Luckily, I've never had one. I think it is. One of my friends actually had to have all those injections.
Michelle, I'll let you do that. I'm not volunteering.
No. So we've kind of alluded to the outcome of this. If a horse does contract rabies, what is the end result? Can we treat the horses, or is it fatal?
Unfortunately, it is fatal. It's uniformly a fatal disease, except there has been 2 humans ever in the history of the earth that I'm aware of that have survived, and they put them into a drug-induced coma. But the horses, if they come in for neurologic disease, you know, we treat them, we look after them, we try to get a diagnosis, but if they continue to deteriorate, it reaches a point where it's no longer humane to try and treat them, and we put them down, and we get the post-mortem, and then we find out that they actually did have rabies. So it is uniformly fatal. There is no treatment at all for animals.
So how do we make sure our horses don't get this?
Well, that's a great question, and it's a really simple answer. Vaccination, and for horses, it's still a yearly vaccine. For dogs and cats, you can do it every 3 years, and that should be performed by your veterinarian. You want to make sure that the vaccine that you're getting is a quality product that's been refrigerated and stored well, and not just fallen off the back of somebody's truck. But yearly vaccination of your horses, your dogs, your cats, the barn cat, etc., every year for the horses and every 3 years for the dogs and cats, and that will protect them and then protect you, and also protect veterinarians and veterinary students that might have to look after that horse if he gets sick.
Okay. And we have an article that you were interviewed for. It's on thehorse.com if people want to go look for it. It's article number 20456, and it's a great refresher on rabies and horses. You told our news editor a story about a little girl who had been exposed, I believe, to rabies that you'd come across. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there's a couple of incidents. I think the one that I'm thinking of was the pony. Was it the pony that had the rabies?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. And that was a case there was a little girl who was riding a pony at a 4-H show, and he was a little bit lame that day, and it seemed strange, and they had the show vet look at the horse and couldn't really work out what was going on. And then the next day, the horse was showing some neurologic signs, and they called their veterinarian out, and he was concerned, you know, maybe West Nile virus, and decided to ship the horse to the university. And so the horse had been showing signs for only 48 hours by the time it was on the road to the university. And it was about a 4-hour trailer ride, and after about 2 hours, the horse went down in the trailer and started attacking itself. And the owner was very concerned about money, and he didn't want to take it to the university and spend a lot of money on a horse that probably wasn't going to make it. And luckily, he was polite enough to give us a call and say, look, I think I'm going to just turn around and go home, and you know, shoot the horse and bury it and not spend any more money because it looks really bad. But we had a talk to him and really strongly suggested that he did bring it to the university, even if he didn't want to spend any money on treatment, that we did put it down in a safe manner, and shooting it in the head is probably not the best way to euthanize it, to be able to test then for rabies. So we were able to use the injections and put it down humanely and did perform a post-mortem and testing for rabies. Now, that horse was positive for rabies, and the gentleman and his little daughter and several other people that were at the show and on the farm and the veterinarian, the two veterinarians that examined the horse, all had to have the post-exposure hyperimmune plasma and the vaccines. Yeah.
That poor child. I mean, the child loses its pony and then also has to go through that torture.
Yes, well, that is very sad, but it would be a lot worse to die of rabies. I couldn't think of a worse death.
Well, I know when I read that, I just thought it was a great example of following through on care and, you know, making sure that everyone is safe.
Yeah.
Besides the horse.
Yeah. And no people have ever got rabies from horses yet that's been recorded, but there's really no reason why they couldn't. They've certainly got it from cattle before, and it'll happen one day, unfortunately. Yeah.
And we do have an updated fact sheet on thehorse.com about rabies also, if anyone wants to print that out and put it in the barn, keep it close, just in case, as a reminder, if you see that raccoon, like Glenn did, that's acting oddly, or in my area we have bats, so that's why I vaccinate for rabies, because we do have that potential here. So thank you, Dr. Stewart. I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, no worries. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Now, Dr. Stewart, can you say y'all for me?
Say y'all?
Yeah, there
y'all.
You go.
I don't know whether I can do that properly in a proper Southern accent. I can say g'day, but g'day y'all, is that all right?
There you go. Perfect.
I'm working on it.
Dr. Stewart can come back anytime there, Michelle, anytime.
For sure.
Lovely to talk to you all.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michelle. We'll talk to you again next week.
Talk to you later.
It's thehorse.com. That's funny. She did sound a lot like Tammy, though, didn't she, Jennifer?
Yes, a similar accent. I think Tammy's been here a little bit longer, so her Texas drawl is a little more prominent.
Yeah, definitely. Tammy lived around all those cowboys down there in Texas, too, so she picked it up a little thicker, I think.
In a way, I always hate the rabies discussions because they kind of give me the creepy crawlies, having been very close to a rabid animal episode that's kind of creepy crawly. But on the other hand, I love it because it's like, hello, all you have to do is vaccinate your horse.
I know.
It's so simple.
I know.
It's so
and the other one we're going to have, Michelle, I wonder, do you know if, remember we had that experience the one time we went out to the barn and several of our cats had been killed overnight. We found two or three of them down where the horses were, and then upstairs in the hayloft, we found two or three cats. They weren't eaten, but they were killed, and it was very obvious they were killed by another animal because of the bite marks. Just broke their necks. And when we went upstairs to check out the upstairs, this creature from the netherworlds came out. And what it turned out to be was a fox that had gotten mange, and it had no hair left on its body, and it truly looked like something out of a horror movie. It had scabs all over, and it just looked like something out of a horror movie. It came running right by us. And what we learned later was that with mange, they'll kill their prey, but they won't eat it. Their mental faculties are going. And we did find it, I think, a couple of days later, didn't we, when we were out trail riding, dead.
It passed away of what appeared to be the mange, because mange will kill an animal if left to go long enough if it's sarcoptic mange. It would be interesting to have a veterinarian weigh in on mange, because it's not something you see a lot in horses, but I have had horses in the past that had mange, and there are different kinds that can be treated very differently, and some that can get to people and some that can't. So we're going to have to put that in the suggestion box.
Yeah, and of course mange, you know, that's commonly known in dogs, I think, are the most common. I guess cats can get feline mange, but then it's also known as scabies in people too. So same kind of critter, as I understand it.
Okay, new topic.
Now that we've got everybody itching and scratching and foaming at the mouth this morning, welcome. I hope you got through breakfast safely before thehorse.com came on today. As we said, Jamie will be back on Friday. Get your really bad ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com.
Put really bad ads in the topic line.
Yes, really bad ads in the subject line. Go on to Craigslist and find those really terrible ads and get them in. We'll have the prize this week. It's the prize pack from Redmond Rock. A couple of quick stories here before we leave today. Wanted to remind everybody that lives in Maryland, if you're near Montgomery County Fairgrounds there in Maryland, you can attend this weekend. The North American Police Equestrian Championships are this weekend, so you can see them compete and do their various competitions over at the fairgrounds this weekend. You can find more out about that at napecinc.org, and Jennifer will post a link to that on the Facebook page. What else was there in the news? One other thing I didn't realize, and we'll leave on this happy note, is that remember we had the discussion about the fact that Jackie McConnell, the trainer who got in all the trouble from that video soaring horses in Tennessee, and the federal government just handed down, the Department of Agriculture just handed down its sentence of $75,000 and public service. He didn't get any jail time for that. Well, apparently it's not over, and I didn't realize this, but the state is also going after him. So he has multiple counts, charges against him from the state, and it looks like he could end up getting jail time from that. So that's been pushed till November the 13th, I think, until that happens. The prosecutor is pushing for that. However, they're trying to, again, negotiate that down and do a plea agreement there. So that's still not over. Apparently the state has stepped in and they're going after him for animal abuse and all that kind of stuff too. So there's still hope that he could go to jail for what he did there. And
Go ahead.
That's it.
I'm going to stay off my soapbox.
Oh, one other story I want to get in real quick for Australian friends down there in Australia. We have a ton of listeners down there. Is that a man in Perth, Australia, had apparently, he runs a wagon trail business, which apparently he'll take you out and trail rides in his wagon. Well, the other day, apparently Perth had changed its laws, and Perth's pretty strict. This town's pretty strict about talking on the phone and driving at the same time. Well, they had changed, apparently, the rule to say that that you couldn't talk on a mobile phone while driving a motor vehicle, and they changed that to vehicle, driving a vehicle. Well, the police pulled him over because he was on the phone while he was driving his wagon through town, and they gave him a $250 fine. Well, apparently this caused such an uproar of public sympathy, who didn't think he should be fined for driving his wagon while talking on the phone, that the police have dropped the charges and dropped the fine against him. However, the police said in a statement, all persons should recognize that being on the road demands full concentration, and in this particular matter, there were also passengers on the wagon. Now, I got to say,
I'm going to side with the police personally.
Give me a break. I'm going to say that these guys are going 2 miles an hour when they're in town driving around. I've talked on the phone while driving my cart before. Give me a break.
I'm sorry. When you're driving, paying passengers around, nope.
It said passengers. Didn't say they were paying, so they might have been volunteers.
He runs a carriage business. They paid.
All right. Well, agree to
disagree.
I'm not saying it was smart, but I don't think it should be illegal. The other guy in Florida was totally drunk, falling off his horse, and went into a high speed chase. I mean, you know, that's definitely worse. All right, that's it for today, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow. Don't forget you can listen to all of the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. We have 8 of them you'll find over there. And you can catch all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com. We have 496 of them. We're going to be at show number 500 soon.
Yep, you're going to have pizza.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, we'll be here. Hopefully, you're going to have to make sure that we're here and we have a little party at show number 500.
Yep.
We'll do that coming up. Thank you, everybody. Glad you joined us this morning. We'll be back on the recorded show tomorrow and back live on Friday morning. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome. Spay, neuter, geld, and vaccinate, folks.
Vaccinate, baby. Vaccinating is good.